Murder Row discusses themes of homicide, violence, sexual assault, and at times uses explicit language. Listener discretion is highly recommended.
My name is Liz, and I grew up on Murder Road. That's not the actual name of the road, that's just how people called it when I needed a ride home. "It's dark, and I'm scared of Murder Road," was a standard response when I'd ask people if they could drop me off at home. I feel really compelled to do this because I've spent my entire life wondering how these murdered people got there, who they were, and what happened to them. And we still don't have any answers. All we have are dead bodies. Welcome to Murder Road Podcast. My best friends are here helping me, and they are...
I'm Katie. Hi.
I'm Misty. Hi.
Unfortunately, Misty is not here in the room with us tonight, so y'all are stuck with Katie and Liz tonight. Hey.
Hey.
So August 25th, 1994 was when Kathy Menendez was found at the end of Fewtown Road. What can you tell me about that day, Liz?
Okay, so it was my mom's birthday, which is a big deal because I'm a complete mama's girl. But she works all the time, and so she was actually off work that day because it was her birthday. And so my mom's birthday is really important because, you know, my mom doesn't do a lot for herself. She just works, feeds us, you know, that kind of stuff, like mom stuff, right? And so also her birthday is important because it meant ice cream cake, which I know sounds so cheesy, but like we were very poor.
Well, no, ice cream cake is worth celebrating, especially if it's the kind that has the fudgy bit in the middle.
Right, yeah. And so back then, the only kind you could get was from Dairy Queen.
That's still the only kind, in my opinion.
Right, absolutely. But so it was a big deal for us because we didn't get a whole lot of treats. We, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. And so that was a big part of our summer birthdays was getting ice cream cake, right? And so that was a big deal, and I was excited to give her a present. I got to be honest with you, I don't even remember what the present was now. And it's because of what happened with Kathy being found, it just overshadowed everything. The other reason it was important is because that means that my cousins were coming over.
What important? The reason your mom's birthday was important?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was like, we're all hyped because it's mom's birthday. Like, yeah, it's going to be a good day. Like, we didn't have a party per se, but it meant that my cousins stop by, probably my other aunt would stop by, there'd be ice cream cake, presents, and mom would be happy, and she wouldn't have to be at work, which was also rare, so we were pretty excited, you know?
How quickly did that day change? Because the newspapers said Kathy was found about 7:30 in the morning. Do you remember anything? Do you remember anything specific about that morning?
Oh, yeah, because my dad and Dwayne Cayley had been, you know, at least passing acquaintances, friends enough that one of the deputies had stopped by and told my dad what was going on as it was just happening.
And for those of you who aren't sure or don't know who Dwayne Cayley is, he was the Portage County Sheriff at the time.
Right.
So did he stop by, like, on his way out to the crime scene, or had he already been to the crime scene?
He may have already been to the crime scene and stopped to use our phone, because everybody that did anything at the end of the road stopped to use our phone, which I never understood because they passed directly by our neighbor's house to come use our phone every time. And so there's a very distinct possibility that they may have just stopped to use my dad's phone.
Does that mean the people who called in finding Kathy's body stopped to use your phone?
That's also a possibility. I don't know.
Because if so, it would have been really early in the morning, like seven. The newspaper said about 7:30.
Yeah, my dad gets up at like 5 in the morning. He always has, since he was apparently a very small child, is what my grandmother said.
Okay, so if they did stop by to use your phone, it was probably before anyone else was awake besides your dad.
Yeah, probably. That makes sense. And my dad was, we were kind of used to waking up for things on our road. People wrecking their cars in the ditch, you know, crazy people showing up, wailing for help on our porch.
Right, we've talked about some of that on the show, I know.
Yeah, so, I mean, we were all pretty used to some rude awakenings, let's say.
Do you remember how soon the emergency vehicles came through, how soon the reporters came through?
I don't remember when the emergency vehicles came through, but I do know that by like, I would say 10 or 11 in the morning, there were news vans lined up along the sides of the road because there was nowhere to park. And they were showing up from places that they didn't know the lay of the land. And so they were parking on the side of the road and walking the whole way back to the crime scene, like with equipment.
So they were, if they were parking, were they parking near your place?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, I wish any of them had known that there were a couple of parking lots to drive to on the road, but it may have been blocked off by emergency vehicles. I don't know. But I do know a lot of the news vans. Some of them had those, like, weird, like, radar dishes on the top.
Oh, yeah, the satellites.
Yeah, not all of them. A couple of them for sure did. And so I do remember seeing people parked across from our house on, and it was so many vans. I would say, like, a dozen.
Which is a lot more than the local stations.
Right. Well, it's, I think some of them would be, like, individual vans and then, like, specific equipment vans. Because, like I said, with the radars on top, that means a specific kind of a camera crew, probably.
I think they use those for live reporting. So they probably had a reporter on scene.
And it may also be my, like, childhood mind, like, blowing these things out of proportion. I'm not sure, but I do remember there being vans across the street that were news vans, and I can't remember if my older sister or my mom had said that that's what they were, but it's like, oh, yeah. There was a bunch of vans there.
So many vans!
But, yeah, it's, so my mom's birthday really very quickly got overshadowed by things going on.
Did you even celebrate that day?
We did, but it was a lot more subdued than it would have been, than it was the day before, because we were, like I said, I was pretty excited. I'm sure my sister was excited.
Did you still get ice cream cake?
Well, of course, because my mom is not a monster.
At least that wasn't stolen.
Right.
But do you remember any of the topics of conversation? Do you remember overhearing any of the adults talking about what, you know, maybe the sheriff had told them, or them just talking about what happened?
I do remember, and I don't remember how I overheard this or from whom, if it was me or my sister or my cousin. One of us overheard, and it may have been me, I don't know, listen, my memory, you know, pretty messed up, but so I do remember there being a point at which somebody was like, they told my dad, oh, don't worry about it. She wasn't killed back there. It looks like she was just dropped off. Like as if that was supposed to somehow be better. And I'm pretty sure it was either one of the deputies or Dwayne Cayley himself. I'm not sure.
So do you remember anything else about that? Maybe not that day specifically, but that time period. Like what were you doing in the summer of 94?
Mm-hmm. Well, my cousin pretty much lived with us and we didn't have TV. We didn't have cars. We had a phone, but who are you going to call? Like
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I mean, we tried that. It didn't work. But so, I mean, we were really bored. And honestly, me and my cousin spent a lot of time in the woods.
Outside, biking around.
Right. And so, but I mean, it's not like we could get in any trouble. There wasn't anybody else there. So we would just go back to the end of the road and go fishing and, you know, walk through the woods looking for Bigfoot tracks and, like, you know, just all the weird shit the kids do, you know?
Did that slow down or stop at all after Kathy was found?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it definitely, like, I think the rest of that summer, and honestly, like, they didn't have to tell us not to go down the road because I don't think we wanted to. I think we were, my older sister and my cousin and I, my cousin and I are basically the same age. She's like 6 months older than me. And then my sister's 7 years older than me. And then my younger sister's younger than all of us. She was a lot younger. So what I know is that we were all really scared. We were all really worried, you know. We had had this, basically like this sweltering buggy green paradise that we lived in, and we got to go play in the woods all the time as much as we wanted. And you know, it was like a It was like living a family retreat all the time, because the only people that were coming there that we would hang out with were family. Like I had dozens upon dozens of cousins, you know? And so, and it was great. It was wild fun until the dead bodies started showing up. And then all of a sudden, a lot less cousins came to hang around. And also, you know, us, the older three girls, I know that we were very cognizant of what was going on.
Because how old would you have been in 94?
Oh, gosh. I want to say like 14, maybe 15.
I think you're 4 years older than me. So I was 11. So that would make you 15.
Yeah, 15. And I would have turned 15, let's see.
Just a couple months before that.
Yeah. So I had just turned 15, and I don't know if you remember being a 15-year-old girl, but the hormones involved in that are just insane. I mean, it's mind-bending, the things that a human body goes through as a teenager. Like, you can almost feel your brain, like, just shifting around all of the connections and trying to rewire you. It's really weird. And I do remember feeling like this very intense, like, sense of upheaval all the time internally because of the, you know, what teenagers go through. And then it was like this whole thing happened with all these dead people showing up. And, you know, so Lisa and Andy had happened the summer before, or well, the fall before, right?
Yeah.
And then, sometime, I'm not sure if it was before Lisa and Andy or between Lisa and Andy and Kathy, but there was another lady found at what used to be an ice cream shack down the road, which was still part of West Berlin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was Virginia. Yeah, that was July of 93, I think.
Yeah, so it was like right before Lisa and Andy, and so it was like all this crazy stuff was going on. And so, like I've described before, how like we would hear like chains hitting cars and screaming and gunshots and like cars burning out and like all kinds of wild stuff, because there was like gang activity or biker activity happening down there. And so it's like we're already hearing all these scary things at night, and then we have, you know, sick people showing up on our porch in the early hours of the morning. And then all these people start dying, and they're all like landing right where we live. And so it's like I'm already this in this teenage state of, you know, upheaval and transformation. And then it's like all these people are getting killed. And it's like, I think that was the consensus between us older kids, was it's like, I would love to go do anything else, but I am so scared to leave my house and be away from anybody else, you know?
Mm-hmm. So if you were 15 in 1994, that you were only 2 years younger than Kathy Menendez, because right. She was 17.
Yeah.
Did you relate to her at all? Do you see?
A lot. I related to her really hard. I can't even tell you how much. Also, her birthday was the same time as mine, within a month.
Yeah, that's true.
So she had just turned 17 right before she was killed. When I saw her picture in the paper, I genuinely cried. I saw it in the paper. It was in the kitchen, and I went to my room and cried, because she looked like anybody else that I would see at the skating rink. She had the same hair as everybody else. You remember the, like, not quite bob, but it, like, the kind of George Washington haircut, you know, with the bangs.
Oh, the bangs. The flipped over feather.
Right. And everybody, that was the thing that year. So she did. She looked just like everybody else I had ever known, you know? And, yeah, I don't know.
So the newspaper articles would have come out a day later.
Right.
This was before the internet and instant news, 24-hour news cycle. The articles still had to be written and printed, and the papers had to be distributed.
Right.
So were you aware of everything that the newspapers have reported the next day, because by the next day, the stories published on the 26th called Kathy by name, knew who she was, had already talked to her family. There was several stories written for the following day. Do you remember knowing any of that previously? Like, do you remember hearing that day on the 25th?
I just remember some adult or other talking about she was some girl out of Alliance, but she had friends in Deerfield. She was supposed to have been in Deerfield, but no, I didn't hear a lot about her, no.
Do you remember if any reporters stopped by your house?
They probably did. I don't remember specifically, no.
According to newspaper articles and the National Weather Service, August 25th, 1994 was calling for mostly clear skies with a high of 84, lows in the mid to upper 60s, and no rain was forecasted, which, to be honest, is really unusual for Northeast Ohio, at least back then. Summers were always so humid, like that green buggy paradise you talked about.
It's so hot.
Late August was always so hot and so humid and so sticky that there's more thunderstorms almost every day. At least every day had like a 50% chance of thunderstorms.
Yeah, that's true.
So if there was no rain in the forecast the day before either, it wouldn't be that unusual to see people out at the woods.
No. Uh-huh.
Even people partying the night before.
Right.
Do you remember hearing any of those chains or screams or nefarious things the night before?
Nope. Ironically, that was one of the quieter nights.
Almost like somebody knew.
Almost like something was going on.
Yeah. So also that day, the Stay by Lisa Loeb was at the top of the music charts.
Oh, God. Why did you mention that?
Because it was the number one song.
I know.
I'm a huge music junkie, if anybody knows me. And the next top songs, like the rest of the Billboard charts, had I'll Make Love to You by Boyz II Men. That was number two.
Worse. It went from bad to worse.
Shut up. I loved Boyz II Men when I was 11. I had the tape.
I love New Kids on the Block at one point. I understand.
Never got into them, but Boyz II Men.
At 4 years difference.
I know, man.
Yeah.
At number three, Fantastic Voyage by Coolio.
All right. Yeah, see, that was more my speed.
Yeah. Number four, Wild Night by John Mellencamp with Michelle Negedicello. And number five was I Swear, All for One.
Oh, my God. That's funny because, one of our sources actually mentioned that Kathy loved to sing. Like, if anything was on the radio, she was, like, jamming and rocking out. Like, you remember singing, like, your hairbrush, but, like, that with her, like, all the time?
What do you mean, did? Like, I don't remember doing that because I acted.
But you know what I mean, but that's what one of the people I talked to about her had said.
Were you able to find out much about Kathy? Because from all of my research, I found a grand total of one news story that mentioned anything about what Kathy may have been like as a person.
Just that she wanted to, I remember in the paper it said, I remember three things that it said from the paper. It said who she was. It said that she was an habitual runaway. That is the phrase that sticks in my mind forever that I've taken offense to ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was that she wanted to go to hair school, which I also related to really hard because I was thinking about doing that too.
Mm-hmm. And almost every article ever written, ever published about Kathy Menendez doesn't mention anything about her. All they say was that she was a habitual runaway. Some of the headlines would read runaway slain teen, runaway found murdered.
Right. And, I didn't know the term victim blaming back then, but I was really mad about it because it just felt like such bullshit. I'm like, what do you mean? You mean this dead girl? You're trying to say she was a bad kid? Is that what you're saying? That's what you're saying, right? That's what this paper is saying. That's what it's telling me. this girl that looks like everybody else I know. Oh God. Oh no. Did she like take off with her friends and like not check first? Or did she like go smoke cigarettes behind the house? Cause who does that? Oh wait, everybody I've ever known.
Here I'm going to cut to a clip that we previously recorded. That clip, you're talking about this exact same thing as to what the implications or the connotation of that kind of coverage said to you and how that made you feel and how as how you related to Kathy.
Yeah.
And I think that the clip that's already recorded says it a lot better than we can ever try to recreate right now. So I'm going to cut to that. And but before I do, I'm also reminded of something Misty said. One of the things Misty said was that Kathy was all of us.
Yeah.
We were all her in the 90s.
Right.
We all had hair and makeup, and we all were a little bit of a rebel. We all stayed out later than we should or didn't come home at all.
Argued with our parents.
Right. We all had plans to or did run away at one point in time. And
or me, your siblings.
I wish I knew more about her. Right. Because I feel like Misty said, she was all of us and we were all her.
100%.
Okay, I'm gonna cut to the clip now.
When Kathy was killed, and the newspapers kept reporting her as being an errant child and habitual runaway, all I saw was that you better toe the line or else the world will eat you up. The world is waiting outside your door to chew you up if you're not a good girl. You can't fuck up. You can't be a bad kid. You can't fucking, you know, have your normal adolescent fuck ups because the world is waiting to eat you up, little girl. I vacillated between wanting to be that good girl and wanting to be whatever it meant to be a good girl and also resenting it and wanting to rage against it constantly and do what the fuck I wanted. I didn't have any concept before that of what it was like to be a good kid or a bad kid. Honestly, like we lived in the middle of nowhere. I didn't have a whole lot of input outside of my microcosm that I lived in. And so for me, that is what defined your existence as a human being, was your value as a girl, as a woman, not as a person, not as a human being, not as a kid, but whether you're a good girl or a bad girl. And I thought it was bullshit then, and I still do. And the newspapers just drove that right the fuck home. And they always put the onus of responsibility on a fucking 17-year-old girl. Me and my mom, thanks to Bill Clinton, we developed a don't ask, don't tell policy. At some point, like, she asked if I had tried this drug or that drug. And she asked about, I think it was cocaine. And she said, you know, have you ever tried cocaine? And I said, yeah, I did. I didn't understand it. And she's like, what do you mean you didn't understand it? I'm like, I didn't enjoy it per se. It just tasted gross. And I felt antsy, but I didn't feel like sped up or smarter or faster. So I didn't really like it. And I think after that, she was like, well, maybe I shouldn't ask if I don't actually want to know. But I learned really early on that being honest was easier and better because, not because I was an honest person to start with, but because it was just faster. Because I'm going to get caught anyway. That's just who I am as a person. I'm large and in charge, and I always get caught. So I just, from very early on, I just decided that I was just going to be honest. And it's not because I was some exemplary human being. It's because I was too busy to fuck around with getting caught in lies. But I still wanted to sneak out with dudes and, you know, go drink with my friends and go smoke cigarettes behind the house. But I don't think I deserve to die for that. And I didn't think Kathy did either.
And we're back. I wasn't able to find out much about Kathy herself. Like I said, I found a grand total of one news story that mentioned anything about her as a person. And it was through the words of her family. Newspaper article that was in the Alliance Review, Kathy's mom recalled that when Kathy was in elementary school, she used to come home and ask her mom to give away her clothes to the kids who needed it more than she did.
Oh, gosh.
And because Alliance is not a wealthy area.
No.
If you you had clean clothes every day as a child. You were in the top half.
Yeah. Well, and also, people didn't have washers and dryers in their houses then.
No. I mean, it's not a wealthy area. It's a lot of working class families, and there's more have-nots than haves.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so even as a child, she wanted to give away what little she did have to kids who needed it more. And her mom also said that there were several times in elementary school where she just gave away her shoes.
Aww.
I have kids in elementary school right now, and that just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Because I can see my kid doing that. I can see my kid coming home without shoes and me being all mad, being like, son, where are your shoes, child? What did you do with them?
Right.
Well, and then him telling me that I can picture it. I can see him saying this kid in my class doesn't have any, or his shoes had holes in them.
Well, but at the time, it wasn't the same. Like, people who took care of their kids were not as common. It wasn't a thing. Parenthood was not a thing. It was just a thing that happened to people.
That's true.
Whether they had the money to do it or not, a lot of times. And so a lot of times, the people who had the most kids really had no way to deal with them, you know? And so you're looking at, this was the time period when it became a thing for both parents to have to be working. This is when the latchkey generation began, which, hi.
Hello.
Hello. And so, I don't know. And so the idea of how people treated their kids, it's like a parent might not know that their kid needed shoes because they might not be home from work long enough to know, you know?
Right.
It was a whole different thing back then. We didn't have Instagram telling moms what they should and shouldn't be doing.
Or even if they did know, it might not have mattered because payday wasn't until next Friday.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
And so you're just going to have to make do until then.
And there weren't social programs then like there are now.
Not many of them.
I think the WIC program was like in its infancy, right?
I think that may have actually come a couple years later.
Okay.
But there were plenty of churches and like the Salvation Army was a thing, but they were.
But a lot of people wouldn't take handouts.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying organizations wouldn't accept hand-me-downs. People themselves would not accept, quote-unquote, handouts
right. From
organizations or other people because there was still a very large stigma around it.
Well, there still is.
Yeah, but it was even worse back then.
Yeah.
Like, such a huge stigma around accepting help, like accepting public. Like, I know several moms who were single moms in the early 90s and in the 80s. And even earlier than that. So a lot of, like, my contemporaries' parents were single moms and were determined to do it on their own.
Well, people didn't have health insurance as a standard then either.
No.
So, like, if you had, like, six kids and one of them had broken an arm ever, you were probably working, like, another job to pay that off. Like, it was different times.
Or if you were me and you broke a foot, you broke your foot as a child, your parents called the nurse who went to the same church you did.
Right, right.
And asked her to take a look at it before church on Wednesday.
Right. Yep. 100%. Because it was just different. It was just different then. But so, yeah, that's very sweet. And I'm so, it really actually just breaks my heart even more. Because it's like, so the newspaper said what a bad kid she was. And it's like, no, she was actually just a really good person.
Yeah, and it also said she was very trusting. And I don't know if that was written in a way to
be condescending.
It'd be right. I don't know if that was written in a way to portray being naive or as some sort of weird innocence thing.
I don't either.
I don't fully know. I'd like to just take it at face value for what it is.
Yeah.
And choose to believe that means that Kathy just chose to see the good in people.
Listen, I'm always going to err on the side of somebody that's not here to defend themselves was probably a much better person than some media would have them portrayed to be.
Absolutely. And one of the things I always wondered too was that if Kathy and Sarah Boehm would have liked each other in real life.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I wonder.
Be- they're consistently linked in death,
right? Which it kind of infuriates me, and also it kind of makes me happy that they're not alone. I don't know how I feel about it. I still, all this time, 29 almost,
no, exactly.
On 29 years later, I still don't actually know if I feel good or bad about them being so closely conjoined.
And I think that's another way that Kathy was kind of forgotten about in coverage and in the media was a few months later, Sarah Bain was found in the same woods. And the FBI got involved because that crossed state lines.
Well, also, no, that's not why the FBI got involved then. The FBI got involved then because she was a minor, and the Beaver County police got a hold of them because they didn't know where she was and she was a missing child. But for some reason, Alliance didn't do that for Kathy because they assumed she was an habitual runaway. Which we don't actually know how many times she was actually reported missing. All we know is that her mom said that she took off all the time.
I know kidnapping falls under the FBI's purview, so if officials in Pennsylvania had thought that Sarah was kidnapped...
And they might have, because before that, there was actually a news report where you saw Sarah talking to a reporter saying that somebody had tried to grab her. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
We watched that.
Yeah.
But so that may be why, but I thought that the difference was is that Beaver County had actually reached out for help, whereas Alliance PD, from what I understand, it didn't seem like they actually cared to help Janet Menendez all that much look for Kathy.
No, not at all. Well, considering how they treated her when she went to go report Kathy missing.
Get specific about that, because we've heard a bunch of different reports about this, so I think that we should mention this.
Okay. Saturday, August 20th was the last time that Janet Menendez, which is Kathy's mom, saw her. She was about to take Kathy's younger brother to go see Jurassic Park, which was brand new in 94.
Yeah. Oh, I think we talked about this on the phone.
Yeah, and it was hot shit.
Right. It was a big deal. Yeah. Listen, and it was cool. I remember seeing it back then. It was a big... Do you remember the thing with the water glass? Shaking?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I almost peed. That's a big deal.
But anyway, so Kathy's younger brother and her mom were going to go see Jurassic Park. And Kathy had told her mom, I'll see you tomorrow after you get home. And she would have been home from work Sunday about 3 o'clock. But Kathy wasn't there. And yes, Kathy took off a lot and stayed out all night, but they had an arrangement, Kathy and her mom. She would always tell Janet where she was, and Kathy's friends did the same thing.
Or have one of her friends tell her, yeah.
Right, right.
Because there weren't cell phones.
No, there were. There were barely pagers.
They weren't common back then.
That's no, true. No.
They were for, like, doctors and EMTs. And
yeah. Yeah. So you had to use the phone at your friend's house or use a pay phone or ask at the restaurant you were at or the bar or wherever.
But that day,
Janet said, according to this newspaper article, she said that it felt different. That Kathy not coming home and not telling her where she was and none of her friends knowing where she was just felt different. So she went down to the police station on, this would be Sunday the 21st at this point, went down to the Alliance police station to report Kathy missing. And the officer on duty said, and this is a quote from the paper, said, why do you want to bother? She's out having a good time. She'll be back. To which Janet, hopefully, very sarcastically, sorry I wasted your time, and left.
Oh, God, that's cold, man. That is rough.
Yeah.
And I can relate. But that's wrong.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a sec here. That officer, I don't know if he felt bad or his boss was like, dude, you can't do that. But whatever the case was, he followed Janet home.
Maybe he's going to go look in the bushes and see if there's a teenager in there.
Maybe, or maybe he was just going to be creepy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But either way, he followed her home, and then Kathy's dad signed the missing persons report.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. They couldn't do anything without a man's permission.
Right. Why trust her? Why trust the hysterical mother?
Right. That's what it was like. People don't realize that it was not that long ago.
No, it really wasn't.
No.
So I think that brings me to my next question for you, Liz.
Okay.
You said that as a teenager, you related to Kathy, but now as an adult, you relate to Kathy's mom. Can you explain why, broad strokes?
Yes, we've mentioned this before, but I can go into more detail about this. So when my daughter was a teenager, my daughter, who is now an adult, a healthy and happy adult, by the way, she got exposed to drugs very, very young by some older people who did not have her best interests at heart. And her being a child in the grips of what I was just describing about being a teenager, how your brain is reformatting itself and the agony that that is. In the midst of all that, she was exposed to drugs that are very addictive and very harmful. And so she developed substance use disorder, and that happened very quickly. We went through a lot with her. I went through a lot with her. She would do things like take off in the middle of the night to go sneak off with older friends. But at one point, she took off. She was gone for about 6 hours before I realized that, no, she was actually, she just had run away. Knowing what I knew, which was that she was in a very bad place, in a very bad headspace, I didn't know who she had gone off with. I contacted the police for help, and they said things like, you know, you can't control teenagers. There's only so much we can do, time and resources, and blah, blah, blah. You know, all the stuff that they tell people when you know for sure that a child is not kidnapped. They don't treat them like children. They treat them like adults at that point. So, yeah, she was gone, and me and, you know, you and Misty and some of my other friends, we were all actively trying to figure out where she was, what she was doing, if she was still in the state of Ohio, if she was still alive. Because I know for 3 days, I didn't have any confirmation of whether or not she was even alive. You know, because she was so deep in the grips of whatever drug or dude she was under the influence of at that time. I know every mom who has a missing teenager probably goes through something similar, which is that you are terrified and you're scared and you're sad and you think of all of the things that you should have said or done differently, and you remember every dateline you've ever seen, you know. But for me, it's different because I grew up with these very, very stark examples of what could happen to teenage girls that go missing. Because they don't always come home. You don't always get them back. I, by proxy, witnessed a woman not get her daughter back. And so the whole time my kid is missing, it's like this constant state of trying to pretend like you're okay and be okay because you have other kids and other obligations. And you can't get people to help you when you're hysterical and you're a hot mess. People don't want to help. They want to go away from that. They're afraid of that. Right. Or afraid of women who are hysterical, or anybody who's hysterical, which is fair because in most circumstances, that really signifies some sort of mental illness or instability that could be dangerous. And so I understand that, but it's really hard.
Well, yeah, and people who are experiencing a trauma like that aren't at their best selves.
No, not even close. And because I know that people don't get their kids back all the time, and so I was actively working on figuring out how to track this child down. I mean, branching out local resources, because I had been volunteering in the overdose prevention community for a couple years at that point. So I was tapping those resources, everybody that I knew on the scene, everybody that I knew that I had ever you know, given a Narcan kit to everybody that I knew that had any kind of, you know, not necessarily police, but like, you know, street knowledge that I could tap into. I was doing that. I had people like, you know, you guys helping me figure out how to do like geotags on photographs, which is, I mean, you know, you were there. That's how we actually tracked her down at one point. And I contacted the deputy that was supposed to be the person I was, my contact point, the guy I was supposed to be talking to.
About your missing daughter.
Right. And I actually called him and left a very detailed message. And he didn't answer me until the next day. The very next day. And I...
What did the message say? Was that the one where you told him exactly where she
was?
Yes.
I told him exactly where she was right then. And I specifically clarified that, no, she's not going to be there very long. Because she's not been staying in one place. You know, all the reports I had been collecting of her from people around town. And, you know, Portage County, it wasn't all just in Portage County. It was parts of Stark County and parts of Akron. And so she was covering a lot of ground. And we knew that, mm-hmm. You know. And so I explained on the voicemail I left this man, I explained to him that she was moving around a lot and she was probably not going to be at that same place. And so if he could even, not even just call me back, just send somebody or go drive by there and maybe check and see mm-hmm. if she was there or anything like that. And he got back to me the next afternoon and told me he would check it out the next afternoon. And I said, there's no point. She's not going to be there. She's literally not going to be there because the guy that she was running around with was probably a drug dealer. I don't know the specifics. I wasn't there. But, you know, we've seen his rap sheet. Mm-hmm. But so then after that, we actually, I set up a sting operation. Another friend from the recovery community had gotten a hold of me, and he said to me, he's like, listen, I don't know if I should do this, but I am in contact with your daughter. What do you want me to do? And so I set up a literal sting operation. I found out where she was, right? Mm-hmm. And I was arranging to have somebody who, because he didn't drive. That was the other fun thing. So he didn't drive. So I had to find him a ride, but it couldn't be me because she would see my car and take off. So I had to find somebody that had a car that she didn't recognize to take this man to go pick her up under the guise of whatever it was that they had been communicating about. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to incriminate him. And ironically, nothing illicit, just something that I don't want to pinpoint who he is. And so she had been in contact with him. I set up for him to meet her at this trailer park down on Summit Road, right? And so she had had somebody drop her off on Summit and was walking to the trailer park when the same sheriff that I had called that said that he would check on her the next day. He was driving by and saw her walking and picked her up. So technically, I guess the police did help pick her up, but it was ironic because I was getting ready to pick her up myself.
Yeah, if he hadn't just been happened to be driving
right
at that exact place at that exact time.
Right.
And I'm sure he took all of the credit for it, too.
No, actually, I think I called him and mentioned that that's what I was doing, was going to pick her up.
Oh, so you told him where she was and where you were going.
Yeah.
Oh, so he didn't just happen to be driving by.
No. Because the day before, I had given him the coordinates of where she was, the specific, exactly on the map coordinates. Because geotagging is awesome.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, though, that wasn't as close to the station house as where they ended up finding her.
Yeah. Yep. That's about right.
So he would have had to drive a little bit further.
Right. Well. Anyway, so yeah, he got the credit for that, and I met him in a church parking lot and collected my daughter, who was very high on drugs. and not in a good way. And then we went and took her to the hospital and signed her in, which was a whole different mess. But so, I mean, we got my kid back by hook or by crook. You know what I mean? That was not sanctioned activity. That we had to set up a sting. Well, I had to set up a sting operation to get my kid back. And it's a miracle I did. I mean, truly.
Yeah. And I hear so much of this from throughout true crime stories. So much of one woman, whether it's a mom, a girlfriend, a best friend, one or two women being like, no one is helping me. No one is believing me. And if this is going to get solved, if my loved one is going to be found, it's going to be because I do it.
Well, that's what bothers me, too, is thinking back to Janet. She didn't even have the internet.
No. And she had another child to care for.
And they didn't. I did, too. But they didn't even have cell phones then. Like, that's the only advantage that I had in that moment was that teenagers all had cell phones, whether we got them for them or not.
Right.
Especially any of them affiliated with drug dealers.
And they had no idea how to protect their privacy.
No. Not a bit. But yeah, so it just pains me to no end to know that Janet was probably still going to work every day, still taking care of her other kid. It just it hurts my heart so bad to know that she didn't have friends who were like super geniuses, and she didn't have like connections in the recovery community, because probably the recovery community then was not a thing.
At least not like it is now.
No. Uh-huh.
You might have had some AA people, but that probably would have been about it.
Right. It sucks so bad knowing that she had nobody on her side, nobody to help her, nobody to comfort her while she was waiting to figure out what happened to her kid or see if her kid was going to come home.
And nobody listening.
Not anybody listening.
And then to go on another 29 years to not have it solved.
Or to have to go identify her.
Yes.
In the field.
Yes, this is the next point. So knowing what parents of missing children go through, the agony of not knowing. You finally get a call saying that the sheriff's department is going to be coming by. You're at work. How are you supposed to do your job knowing that the sheriff's department is going to show up at your job at literally any moment and say what?
We need to come identify a body.
Which is what they said. And they didn't take her to a morgue. They didn't show her a photo. They took her to Fewtown Road on August 25th to identify her daughter as she lay naked and beaten on the side of the road in the woods by a gas well.
How much indignity can one person suffer?
That to me is just unconscionable.
It's so angry. Why would you do that? If you have a mom, why would you do that to any mom?
Right. From a procedural standpoint, why would you do that as a law enforcement officer? You don't bring civilians to your crime scene.
Don't get me started about how crime scenes were processed back then. But
that's a different story entirely.
Forensics were fairly new and not very common. I get that, but like also like common sense.
Why would you want a mother to look at their child in that state?
I don't even know if they covered her up.
You know what? I think they must have covered her at least partially, because I read one article that said that Janet didn't ask if she was clothed or not.
Just the profound cruelty. I can't.
One of the articles said how Janet recognized Kathy's hair and the sunlight reflecting off of Kathy's bleached hair, and she knew it was her.
Yeah.
And there were other articles that talked about how far away you could hear her screaming.
Yeah. neither. I just, it's so cruel.
It's inhumane. It's cruel.
As somebody that was afraid that I would have to identify my kid, and I was hoping it would be a morgue. But yeah, she had to do that in a field with newspaper people and sheriff's deputies and God knows who watching. I just can't. It's like an extra fuck you. It really is. Well, it's an extra, it's not even a fuck you, it's an extra, this is how little of a shit we give.
Which is, to me, still an extra fuck you. I don't know what's worse, the lack of empathy or outright cruelty.
Because it does feel cruel, right?
It does. And I don't know if it's intended to be outright cruelty or if it's just that callous.
I don't either. I can't, I wasn't them, I wasn't there. I don't know. I prefer to think that nobody is that cruel intentionally, but it's really fucking cruel.
Yeah, if it's not intentional, if it's not intentionally malicious or intentionally cruel, it's downright incompetence. It's incompetence at best.
Yeah. Yep.
And if it's not incompetence, then it's far worse than that. It's cruel, it's malicious, it's inhumane, it's victim blaming, it's saying we're in charge.
It's a lot. I did know that they made her come and identify her on the scene, and I knew that as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole time my kid's missing, I'm like 70 to 80% sure that I'm not going to get my kid back. Because I've seen it happen. I was there. I mean, I wasn't on the scene, but I mean, it's like I knew that she had been brought to the scene and had to identify her daughter in the field. I knew that before it was in the paper because of the deputies or whoever that it was that my dad was talking to. A lot of the stuff that, like I said, I can't remember if I overheard or somebody else overheard. So my dad would talk to people in his garage. Which means that, like, if you're in the yard, you hear everything they're talking about because dudes didn't care back then. If there was no discretion. What's that?
Obviously, if they're taking a mother to identify a child by the side of the road, there's no discretion.
Or telling a father of daughters that it's fine because they weren't killed there. They were just dropped off. Like, as if somehow that was better. I still can't believe they made her do that. I can't believe they made her do that. I still can't believe that they made her do that. And if I was her, I don't know how I would ever move on.
I don't either.
Which, honestly, is probably the reason that I don't feel like we've made a lot of effort to reach out to her. I don't feel like that's right. I feel like every time people want to revisit these cases, they want to talk to the family. And that's fair, and that's valid. But also, I don't want to hurt her anymore. This woman has been through enough. I mean, truly, the only thing that I can hope is that by us doing this, it's going to make somebody nervous. It's going to make somebody's ex-girlfriend talk. It's going to make somebody's cousin say something because they're nervous, or whatever it takes. Just
or somebody who's now a parent. To say something. Well, that was rough. We're going to leave it at that for tonight. Tune in next time. We'll get into a little bit more detail of some more specifics.
And also, if you knew her, if you knew her family, if you saw anything, if you saw things that you didn't think were a big deal or relevant then, or you mentioned anything to anybody at that time that you had seen that you suddenly remember hearing all this, if you remember what she was like, we just wish we had known her. And I feel like she really got the short end of the stick with the media, and I feel like she was portrayed to be just a bad kid, and I don't think that that's all she was, and I don't think that that's all anybody ever is.
No, there was an article that said Kathy's high school friends were asking people to wear purple and black ribbons to remember Kathy. So put on a purple and black ribbon. And if you knew her, if you knew Kathy, and you feel like sharing memories about her, please let us know, because we would love to know more about her. And if you saw something, if you know something, please reach out, if not to us, to law enforcement. Even if you have already talked to anybody in law enforcement at any point over the past 29 years, reach out again.
Yeah, even if you don't have anything relevant to say and you just want to tell us how you felt at the time, if you want to tell us how you felt about her or were friends with her brother or her mom, we want to hear from you. We want you to be able to say what the newspapers didn't say.
Which was a whole lot. There's a whole lot they didn't say. The best way to reach us is by email, and that's going to be murderroadpodcast@gmail.com. We're also on the shell of what was Twitter and Instagram. Those are both at murderroadpod, but email is still the best way. Even if you don't think what you have to say is significant, let somebody know. It's never too late.
It's never too late.
If you have any information, no matter how insignificant it may seem, about the deaths of Andy Hoosey, Lisa Waters, Sarah Baim, or Catherine Menendez, please contact the Portage County Sheriff's Cold Case Information Line at 330-297-3890 or the FBI in Cleveland at 216-522-1400 or Pittsburgh at 412-432-4000. If you're not comfortable contacting law enforcement directly, you can reach out to us and we'll let them know anonymously if you wish. You can find us on Twitter at MurderRoadPod, and you can email us at MurderRoadPodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at MurderRoadPodcast. Also, we play by Murder Squad rules here. Please no naming names in public, no side-by-side photos, don't dox each other, and just be nice out there. I also would like to include a note that we will protect people's anonymity to the best of our ability every time. It's important.
So if you do reach out to us and you're afraid of being on air, having your name played on air, all you have to do is request that we don't, and we will honor your wishes.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, it's never too late to make a difference.
This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Trifecta Media. Sources for this episode include, but are not limited to, the Alliance Review, the Record Courier, the Canton Repository, thisdayinhistory.com, the National Weather Service, and music is by Penguin Music. Thanks so much for listening.